Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the FBN Holdings Half Year 2021 Earnings Call. Thank you for taking the time to join the call today and for your continuous interest in FBN Holdings. My name is Tolu Oluwole, Head Investor Relations. I am the moderator for this call. Following an overview by the Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings, an interactive Q&A session will be available. However, before I hand over the call to the Group Managing Director, and as typical, I will go through a few conference protocols. Participants are encouraged to please use the raise hand function to ask questions, and microphone will be unmuted once called upon to speak. For efficiency of this process, questions will be taken in batches of two or three before responding. And after asking questions, microphones must always be muted, except when speaking. This is very important to avoid interruptions. And that said, I would like to hand over the call to the Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings PLC, Mr. UK AK. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Tolu. And let me say good afternoon and good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and I would like to welcome you to the FBN Holdings PLC investor and analyst result presentation. This is for the half year ended June 30, 2021. My name is UK Eke, and I am the Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings PLC. As always, I have my colleagues on this call, and I would like to introduce them very quickly. Dr. Shola Adediton, the CEO of First Bank, Kayode Akinkugbe, the CEO of FBN Quest Merchant Bank. We have Wale Ariyibi, the CFO of FBN Holdings PLC. I'd also like to introduce Patrick Iyamabo, the CFO of First Bank, Shegu Alebiosu, the CRO of First Bank, and we have Ini Ebong, the Group Executive Treasury and International Banking, who is also here. Anchoring this call, as you heard earlier, is Tolu Oluwole, the Head Investor Relations. I think a good way to start this presentation would be to say that 2020 was indeed a very challenging year for all parties across the globe. And so far, 2021 has not been any better. We do acknowledge the fact that there's been a massive rollout of vaccines across the globe, but we also know that the pandemic has remained, I would say, resilient, particularly with reported resurgence in certain parts of the world. And lately, we've also heard of new variants that have been spotted. So I have to say that we are still in for a very tough ride. However, there are positive signs that have emerged between last year and now. First up, Nigeria exited recession in 2020. That's good news. And between then and now, the economy has continued on its recovery path. And this is 2021. You recall that first quarter we grew 0.5% on the GDP. And this is on the back of the 0.1% growth for the last quarter of 2020. So I will then move to our presentation proper, and I'll start with slide five straight away. Slide five, as you can see, our businesses over the last 12 months consistently posted improved quarter on quarter performance. And this resilience is proof that our strategy has been successful. This is something that we are proud to share. And as you see, the profit before tax is up 9.2% year on year, and that's on the back of 48.1% increase in non-interest income. Also interesting to note is the asset quality improvement that you obviously started spotting 2 years ago. We have been on that steady path to improving our NPL ratio, and impairment charge is down, or was down 20% year on year. NPL ratio, like I said, showing good signs on a steady path a reduction, moving from 7.7% we reported at the end of the 2020 financial year to close at 7.2%. So we're happy with the journey. Now, in line with our revenue diversification objective, we have continued to strengthen our electronic banking business. And you can see we recorded a 32.7% increase year on year on that line of business. And we are pleased again with the sustained increase in our agent banking network. Interestingly, we closed June 2021 with 117,000 agents across the length and breadth of Nigeria. And here we have a very strong value proposition, very straight and very clear. Enhance overall penetration of banking and also support the deepening of financial inclusion. This is apart from rendering services to our clients and the entire banking population. Now, I would also report that we are happy with the growth we recorded with respect to the loan book, which grew during the period by 14.5%, that is year to date. And we have been very deliberate in focusing on manufacturing sector, power, oil and gas downstream, in addition to a strong foray into public sector. And we have maintained, as you will expect, quality at entry. So, and we would hear more about the NPL on the vintage book, which has continued to be well below 1%. And in addition to that, I would say we have a very healthy pipeline of transactions and deals, even as we seek to optimize the value chain in the short to medium terms. Now, during this period also, specifically 29th of April, Central Bank appointed new non-executive directors at both FBN Holdings and also the Commercial Bank. Of course, the executive management team was retained. We think that the continuation of the executive management team reflects the regulator's confidence in the direction of flight for the group. It also ensures stability, underpinned by our sustained delivery of strategic imperatives as committed to the market and as mandated by the board. And this is what we have done over the last 5.5 years or so. And on that, I think it's important to maybe dwell a bit longer on the achievements of this incumbent management team. And that takes me to slide 6. Clearly, you would see that we have made progress over the last 6 years. And I'm going to just walk you through this slide. Now, you would notice that our focus has been on optimizing the earnings of the group. We've also done a great deal of work on diversifying our revenue base. Rather than relying on funding income, we've had to move along the lines of transaction-led banking and electronic banking activities, which is good. We've also been very successful, I would say, in managing the book. The asset quality has continued to improve, and we've also increased on a sustainable basis the contribution of the international subsidiaries, where we are seeing right now nearly 30% contribution from the international banking operations of the group. So this is good. And with respect to the NPL, again, for emphasis, if you check or remember where we were in 2016, 24.4% NPL ratio. And that has come down very significantly to just about 7.2% at the end of June 2021. Now, this is good news for us. Overall, you see an improvement in the post-tax return on average equity, which was 2.1% in 2016. And then now we are reporting near double digits, basically 10%. On the return on average equity for 2021 half year. Now, I have to say that by the time we get further down the presentation, we are tracking very well with respect to our strategic planning program, where we gave indication on where we want to land this great institution in the next 3 years. We are committed and resolute that we'll be able to implement all of these plans. So we will forge ahead based on the new vigor, and this management team is committed to delivering our numbers. I would say that with respect to where we were in 2016, the commitment we made to the market was that we will focus on cleaning up the book. We will focus also on strengthening transaction banking. We will focus on reworking the group diversification project so that we don't rely so much on the commercial bank, Nigeria. And I think this has worked significantly in the last 5 years. But going forward, having concluded with the cleanup of the book, nearly completed, we are now embarking on a new growth phase. And that new growth phase will be anchored on delivering growth, also enhancing profitability, and restoring the group to its leadership position. That is the commitment we are making for the near to medium term. And I'll go to slide 7, just to try and spend more time on the specific things we have done. On this slide, we are happy that our strategic focus on revenue diversification and leadership on the digital banking space has created what we call an e-banking unicorn, and that's massive. We are delighted that we have taken some aspects of our business from near zero revenue to now delivering significant contribution to our bottom line and our gross earnings. So we have developed a robust and leading electronic banking business, which has the capacity to grow and also further enrich our customers' experience, and obviously, which is certain to support our group valuation in the near term. And we have broken it down: USSD, mobile banking, agent banking, cards, and others. So on this slide, you see the improvement in revenues from these business lines and these product lines, and as a continuous contribution from the agent banking, the USSD, and the mobile. And this is despite the 50% reduction in regulatory fees, or in fees occasioned by regulation. And this was something that was not envisaged, but we tried to work our volumes. So a combination of the volume and price of fees have resulted in this significant improvement in our numbers, and we are happy. With respect to the USSD, we will continue to scale up. We believe there's so much more to be done in acquiring new customers and increasing the volumes and also the value of transactions. And this would translate to very healthy revenues for us. On the mobile and internet banking side, we have increased our customer count, the adoption of our products, riding clearly on new and innovative offerings. So we keep sharpening and adding new products to the offering. And we are confident that this direction of travel will sustain it, and the improvement in the revenues will continue quarter on quarter, year on year. On a compounded annual growth rate basis, you will see that between 2016 and 2020, we achieved 22%. But if you just flip that, between the half year of 2020 and the half year of 2021, you are seeing a CAGR of about 33%. So that tells you the momentum that has peaked on those product lines, and we will continue to see improvements year on year, like I said. I'll move straight to the next slide, which is slide 8. And what we are showcasing here is that we're in a very strong position to continue to grow along the lines I spoke and to provide value to the stakeholders. What we are saying is that we've made the investments on platforms, and we've got the capability, we've got the scale, we've got the network, we've got a strong franchise and brand recognition that can compete not just in Nigeria, but also across Africa. And some of these products and cards are already being deployed in our African subsidiaries, which means if you extrapolate, we will continue to see improvements in the contribution of our African subsidiaries to our bottom line. Moving on to slide 9, and here I would like to make sure that our priorities for 2024, I talked about strategic planning period. I want to be sure that they're well understood. The previous strategic plan was anchored or centered around cleaning up and relaying the foundation of the group. I think, and the evidence supports this position, we have largely achieved this. And so the emphasis for the new phase, we want to now be able to drive growth in a more aggressive fashion. We want to be able to improve returns to our shareholders. We want to enhance our customer experience. This is the new direction of travel for us over the next 3 years. And I would say this current thinking is anchored on 4 critical pillars, and I would like to just summarize them. First of all, we'd like to continue to grow and diversify our revenue base. Again, without so much dependence on funding income, given the platform we have built, given the products and our value proposition on digital space, we'd like to be able to diversify the earnings base significantly. And we're going to do this by leveraging the entire businesses in the group. We're also going to focus on digital play. We're going to focus on product adoption and scaling up of our agent banking network. This is a product that did not exist about 2.5 years ago, taking it from 0 to 120,000, nearly so. And so embedded in this pillar is also a high degree of synergy and collaboration across the operating entities that you find in the group. So that's number one. The second pillar that underpins our strategic plan is that we'll continue to optimize our regional footprint. Now, this is very important. Our view is that we'll continue to grow organically. We'll continue to, however, expand within the existing markets that we find ourselves. At the same time, we also think that there's a huge population of the underbanked and underserved population of Nigeria. And so one way to look at it is to find ways and means of penetrating this huge untapped market. And given our scale, given the investments we've made, we think that we're in a good position through partnerships, through acquisitions, to drive this strategic objective of improving our footprint. The third pillar I'd like to talk about is around operational efficiency. Now, this is front and center for us because yes, we have the platform, but we believe we can still improve on the efficiency of these platforms. And so we're going to be spending so much time and resources in the next 3 years to optimize and build our operational efficiencies. That means automating our key processes to improve customer experience, to improve customer interface. We also think it's a veritable opportunity for us to improve turnaround time and increase traffic through our platforms. We think optimizing also the efficiency of our platforms will reduce significantly error rates and help us better manage our risks. So again, we are trying to consolidate technology deployments across the group. This is what we call the group shared services, where some of the platforms that are deployed in the commercial bank can be extended to the merchant bank and other entities to optimize our revenue and manage our costs better. Finally, the fourth pillar is around just innovating and leveraging the robust and world-class technology we have deployed over time to improve and create bespoke customer experience. This is a commitment we have given and is work in progress for us. We're not there, but we've made giant strides and we'll continue to improve on what we have offered. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we believe we have the resources, we believe we have the technical and human capabilities to deliver this. And what we want to do, therefore, is to share with you on this slide what those aspirations are. Speaking of the near to midterm. So look at the ROE. We believe that in 2014, 3 years from now, leveraging all of these, our propositions, we should be able to take our ROE from current 9.9% to over 20%. Clearly, is achievable. We are working on our cost-to-income ratio. We believe that as we fire this machine and generate more revenue and manage or rein in our costs, we should be able to deliver a sub 58% cost-to-income ratio. Now, keep in mind, this is a massive platform, massive franchise with presence across Nigeria with difficult terrains to cover. And therefore, our cost base is structural, more structural than anything. But we do have a commitment to Nigeria, and we think that we can work on the revenue side, retaining the platforms, but deliver a sub 60% cost to income ratio by 2024. Cost of risk, we think we're on the right path. We believe we can deliver a sub 1% cost of risk in the next 3 years. This is a commitment we're giving to the market. And finally, on the NPL, we have demonstrated our capacity to deliver on this commitment, on this particular line, moving from nearly 30% just about 5 years ago to just 7.2%. And as we expand our loan book and book quality loans and minimize the losses, clearly we see the sub 5% NPL achievable over the next 3 years. I will then speed up very quickly. I will skip all of the other areas and just go to the conclusion to allow more time for interactions, for questions and answers. I would like to conclude by saying one more time that this incumbent management team has demonstrated a strong capacity to deliver on commitments. And this we have done over the last 5 years. All the promises we made to the market, we have delivered all of them. And this is strong. And the central bank's position on this matter is unambiguous. We'll continue to take market share from competition across all sectors. We will continue to take market share. Now we are on the growth path. Now we have concluded, nearly concluded the cleanup of our books. And so the focus will continue to be on diversifying our revenue base and also sharpening our transaction-led propositions, which obviously means capital-light deployment and leveraging platforms. We think that the commitment we have made to efficient operations are deliverable. And so our attempts at resetting this group has largely been achieved, and we remain disciplined in executing our strategic initiatives. This is the commitment we're making, and I would like to end at this point and then invite Tolu to come back and monitor or coordinate the Q&A session. Thank you very much. Tolu, please, you have the control now.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. Okay, as we progress to the Q&A session, please ensure compliance with the earlier stated protocol. And so if you wish to ask a question, please indicate using the raise hand functionality. Again, after asking questions, please ensure you have your microphones muted to avoid any interruptions. So we will now take our first question from Jerry. Jerry, please go ahead with the question.
Thank you, Tolu. Good evening, everyone. And thank you again for this call. I just have a few questions. So firstly, again, that's, you know, you spoke about costs. I think, you know, one way that we can see significant value come for FBNH is from the cost side of things. But over the last few years, we've had this cost conversation, So I'd like to know what specific things you would do or what you would do differently to be able to bring down costs to the level that you expect it to be at. So you're predicting less than 60%. What would you do specifically? And what do you think have been the key hurdles when it comes to cost efficiency, you know, for ABNH? I know we've heard about the first shared services, central processing centers, and if these have not achieved the desired efficiency effects, so where should we expect that value to come from on the cost side of things? Secondly, I also want to ask, are you looking at opportunities to expand the portfolio of businesses you have currently under the HoldCo structure? Again, just to strengthen the diversification benefits that you can get from it. Any plans to expand the portfolio of companies or businesses you have under the coverage? Also, my third question, what's your target NPL coverage ratio? You can help us with that, that'll be helpful. Then your capital adequacy ratio of 15.7%, although it excludes the impact of, of retained earnings, but do you think even at 16.8%, that's sufficient enough to drive the kind of growth that you want to see happen, especially as you enter this new phase of your business? And finally, I want to ask about the pricing environment for your liabilities. So I see your cost of funds at 1.8%, which is good, but how do you assess the pricing environment right now going forward? And do you think it's going to be favorable? Thank you.
Thank you. Tolu, I think we can take, as you announced, maybe two more on this batch.
Yes, sir. We have the next question from Toyosi Uni. Toyosi, please go ahead with the question.
Okay, hi team, and thank you very much for hosting this call. So I have a set of questions around your trading gains booked in the period. So first of all, I wanted some clarity on how you classify your special bills, how much you have in special bills, and what the yield is on this book. I also wanted to ask about the size of your derivative book and essentially what drove the 19 billion gains from financial instruments at fair value through profit and loss that we saw in Q2. And then just on that line, what is the expected run rate for the rest of the year? And on that sort of trading gains question, I guess my last question is on your liquidity ratio. So I've also got a second set of questions, and this is more around the other non-interest income drivers. So I wanted to understand exactly what sundry income means for FBN and why this was up 12 times year on year. And then just on your agency banking, I wanted to please ask what the total transaction value on agency banking was as at half year. The revenue on your agency banking, that was up 35% year on year. And I just wanted to pick your brains on the heightened competitive landscape here. So we've seen other banks and fintech sort of make more significant plays. And the pricing dynamic as time has gone has become more competitive as a result. So I just wanted to see how you were thinking about that and how you see agency banking evolving down the line. So I was just running some of the numbers from the presentation and I saw that the fastest growing of your digital channels was actually your mobile and internet banking. I think that had like a 70% growth year on year. So at some point, do you see the revs here outpacing that of agency banking? And then I have some other questions on guidance, but I'll let other people ask questions and then I'll come back later during the call. Thank you.
So do any other question that's ready? So we can thank you.
Yes, sir. Okay. Given the sets of questions, Jende, I think maybe we can take this first two sets of questions, given that's the fine. Number of questions. Yes.
That's fine. Thank you very much to Jerry and Toyosi. Thank you. Excellent questions. I'm just going to take one, and then I will let Patrick and share good deal with the issues from risk to costs to pricing, yield, liquidity ratio, NII drivers, agent banking. The only one I would like to take from the whole cost standpoint is whether we see opportunities in expanding our portfolio. And the simple answer is yes. The straight answer is yes. We see opportunities, but we will make the necessary evaluation based on strategic fit, based on the returns that we see in those sectors. Of course, you know that the economy is still in a flux. There are so many moving parts. And so from a timing standpoint, we will have to be very deliberate about it. But yes, as a portfolio management company, we would continue to scan the environment to see how we can enter new spaces, blue ocean. And obviously when the time is right, we'll make the announcement. But one thing is clear, it has to be strategic. It has to fit into our current group aspirations. The returns have to be sufficient and adequate to cover not just the hurdle rates, but also surpass the hurdle rate we've set for ourselves for each of the businesses. And they have to make sense to even the shareholders that will consider and approve such transactions. So we will be updating you as we find opportunities in the marketplace. So can I then ask Patrick to kick off with those questions that pertain to his area, and then Shegu will join to answer the questions on risk. Patrick, please.
Okay. So thank you very much. Thanks for the questions, and good day, everyone. There are a whole bunch of questions, and I'll just try and tick them off one by one. I think there's a question around what we're doing to drop costs. And whether the things we've explained in the past in terms of digitalization, shared services, optimizing the operating model, whether we're actually seeing results coming out of those activities. I think that's how I'd summarize that question. I'd say yes. And I think the speaker alluded to the fact that we've been talking about cost efficiency the last couple of years. Here is how we'll put our response. I mean, here's a perspective that might help. If you take First Bank and we compare First Bank to peers and you index to December 2015, OPEX growth rate since then to date has been the lowest for First Bank versus peers. So in other words, our cost management initiatives, if you want to independently benchmark, are actually paying off. In terms of the OPEX growth on a year-on-year basis, again, if you x-ray that a little closely, what you would notice is that about 70% of that OPEX growth is regulatory cost induced. And by regulatory cost, we are speaking to NDIC, we are speaking to AMCON, we are speaking to the additional charge that came in through the CBN Act. So in other words, in spite of the significant increase in inflation during the period, in terms of, in spite of the currency devaluation, if you back out the regulatory cost, we have actually handled OPEX and managed our cost base quite well. The reason it may not be fully expressing itself in terms of cost to income ratio is really more around the net revenue bit. And that is really coming out of the shrinkage in our means on a year-on-year basis. Otherwise, what you would have noticed is a very clear improvement in our cost to income ratio. About if you look at the bank specifically, about a 40 billion differential in revs will drop cost income ratio below 60%. So really, in summary, there are actually substantive improvement in costs. The things we spoke about are actually paying off. And you can also test that when you benchmark the improvement over the period versus peers. And yes, indeed, strategically and tactically, efforts are delivering results. The other question was really around CAR of 16.8%, if that is sufficient. And by that, I believe you're speaking to the CAR for the bank. Now, we need to note a couple of things. This 16.8% we are speaking to after capitalizing H1 earnings is really the net after all the asset growth that you would factor in if that occurred in the first half. And in the first half, we grew loans and advances about 300 billion. So putting it differently, this is in spite of the business growth. This is the CAR outcome we're looking at if you capitalize earnings. We still expect earnings to improve. We expect our CAR to continue to strengthen. So we're quite comfortable with where our CAR levels are. One thing you may notice is that our CAR level is also understated by the level of impairment charge we've had to take. And so you can just imagine a world when our NPL percent drops below 5% and our impairment level is a lot less. So that CAR just continues to get so much richer. So again, short answer to the question, and we've consistently said this every year, we do a really great job of managing our CAR, and our CAR levels are sufficient for our business needs. And we are confident that that CAR buffer can continue to build as we improve our profitability into the second half of the year. There was a question around the fair valuation through P&L that was recognized in the second half of the year, as well as the sundry income. I'll step back to respond to those questions. The first half of the year, I mean, we all understand the operating environment where yields have come down pretty hard. CRR has continued to increase. NIMs have shrunk to the levels they are right now. And what we had assured your good selves was that we were alert to what was going on there, but we're also pushing all the levers on our various other non-interest income sources. We also did point out that we were confident about our ability to push those other non-income sources to support our earnings objectives for the year. So there are two broad levers we've played around with, or we've worked on pretty successfully. The first is at the transactional end. And from a transactional perspective, we're talking about all the income sources coming out of our e-business, and that has grown double digits on a year-on-year basis, north of 30%. We're talking about our mobile banking business that has grown more than 60% on a year-on-year basis. We're talking about our USSD business that has grown almost 20% on a year-on-year basis. We're talking about our LCs, account maintenance, all those transactional income sources that gives you a sense of how hard and how successful we're revving the engine. Those things have come out positively and they're reflected in the financials. Now, part of what we also did mention was that we also saw interesting opportunities in the market that could allow us to take advantage of the gains. I mean, the reality is any tough operating environment that has volatility actually does present a different type of opportunity. So one of them was the, and speaking to the fair valuation through P&L, were transactions we put together, and the bulk of them are really FX related, and that allowed us accrete income. And so speaking to the 19 billion, that's a big figure, but a portion of that is FX related, and the balance is really other forms of transactions. In terms of the sundry income, there are a number of things going in there, but the biggest one we'll just speak to is really income from assets realized. And as you know, we've been dealing with NPLs the last couple of years. We've taken possession of a group of assets and we continue to realize them. And so we aggregate and realize them as we perfect our title and we get buyers for them. There was a question around agency and speaking to the heightened competition and what next. Yes, you're correct. The competition in agency space has increased. And from our perspective, some of the competitors there do not necessarily have the same objectives that we do in the immediate term. And so they are able to transact even if they're not necessarily profitable. We have a very profitable agency business and we intend to continue to manage it profitably. Like I did mention, it's grown significantly on a year-on-year basis. We've noted the actions out there, particularly how some of our peers are competing. We have a much better sense of the price elasticity of demand, and there are certain tweaks we've put in place. and we're looking forward to an exciting 2H and 2021. The fact remains that in terms of agency, we know that space. We are one of the very few that has been able to successfully run it very profitably. We have differentiated advantages in terms of the capabilities existing house. We have the branch network that provides the hubs. Cash management is something that's big for the bank, and it's also very important for agency. So when you pull all these things together and our current scale, not only are we looking at an exciting second half, and we are very confident about growing this business successfully into the future. Our plans for agency have only just started, if I want to put it in that perspective. And so if the question is really what next, we are looking to still grow that business significantly over the next couple of years. Now the question around mobile and internet growing quickly and whether we see it outpacing agency, we see them as two different channels, two exciting opportunities, and both of them with the propensity to be quite significant, not just significant in terms of profitability, but to be able to maintain a very interesting growth rate over the next couple of years. I think this will be a pause here and hand off to the CRO to respond to the next set of questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Shegu, can you please take the next set of questions?
Thank you, GMG. And yes, the question I have here is on the coverage. Now, my response will be that we expect our coverage ratio to be above 60 by the end of the financial year. And I think that's the only question that relates to risk that I have. Thank you.
Okay. Tolu, can we then move to other questions, please?
Fine, sir. So we have the next question from Ronak Gadia. Ronak, please go ahead with the question.
Thanks, Tolu, and thank you, team, for the detailed presentation and taking the time. Three questions from my side. Firstly, if we talk about subsidiaries, the presentation suggests the contribution from subsidiaries increased to 29%. Specifically, could you talk about which subsidiaries contributed towards this turnaround and, you know, what are the specific actions taken in the subsidiaries to drive this turnaround? The second question is on your contribution from card revenue. Based on the new slide that you've put in, it seems the card revenue has consistently declined over the last 5 years. Could you just maybe talk about this? Because it seems quite odd given the increasing number of cards and POSs in Nigeria. It's quite odd to see that revenue stream consistently decline. And then the last one is on your loan growth. I think the GMD mentioned that one of the drivers for the loan growth was increasing exposure to the public sector. Maybe could you just share a bit more insight onto this, which, you know, with specific segments of the public sector, and how should we view the risk on this segment? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ronak. Thank you. Tolu?
So we have the next question is from Gloria Fadipe. Gloria, please go ahead with the question.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my questions. So my first question is around the direction of yields and funding costs. So what I typically expect is that with rising yields that we're seeing, we should begin to see an increase in your yields on interest earning assets, while we expect to begin to also see an increase in funding costs. But from the results, from the half year results, it appears to begin to see these shifts, I mean, yields rising while cost of funds to begin to tick up a bit. Secondly, on your, just to get an idea of what's happening with asset quality, all the loans that were restructured last year, I would like to understand to get a view of how they are performing and if you've seen a significant improvement in those loans. And then on your LTL shares, just an update on the state of those shares. Have they been sold as recommended by CBN or not? And finally, I think those are my questions. The others have been answered already. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Gloria. Again, we'll take this question. There are about six questions. So Patrick and Segun will also answer them. Let's kick off with Segun, so he can take the questions around loan, asset quality, and then Patrick will come back and talk about subsidiaries contribution, and card revenues, and then the direction of yields. Segun.
Thank you, GMD. Loan growth. We saw loan growth more in manufacturing sector, not in public sector. If you check the graph, public sector is actually 0.2% increase. So the real growth was actually in manufacturing sector. We have oil and gas downstream, and for people bringing in AGU and base oil, and we have individuals, personal loans, SMEs, and across. And if you check, you won't see spike actually. You only see smoothing things out there. So we have that. And we are confident, even in public sector where we have exposure, that are linked to federal revenue and state revenue that are very, very strong. And I'm sure you know some states that are very strong. If I say, I'm sure you know, if I tell you I'm exposed to Lagos state government, I'm not sure you're going to worry yourself, because you know our cash flow will come in there. I mean, it's just small. But for manufacturing sector, we've done a lot, and it has been one of our targets to expand our operation in that sector. And you know, manufacturing sector, again, because there are sub-sectors within manufacturing sector. So you won't have material concentration in manufacturing sector, because food and beverages will be different from what you have in metal, will be different from what you have in footwear, will be different from what you have in personal care. And so you have them distributed widely, and then you won't have correlation moving around them. And that was why we went to my family sector to see how we deepen ourselves. And again, the cash flow that will come from there. On the asset quality, the restructured loans of last year, COVID-related, are performing. You recall that were in majorly three or four segments. Those ones in government related, public sector. I mean, state government that federal government said it would not touch. Then we have some in power sector, especially where government is, I mean, NBET is paying money upstream, where you have delay from that. I mean, those ones, the cash have been coming in, so that is gone. So they're doing well. And then you have those ones in oil and gas, and you see that oil and gas upstream sector is doing well, with oil price. I mean, from the day they were above, oil price was above 40, we've seen a lot of progress in respect of that, and so we don't have any concerns. And then the personal loans, I mean, they are doing well, because of course no state government sacks salaries, sack staff, except maybe a Kaduna state that did something not quite long, but virtually all the states, no one is sacking, and federal government did not sack anyone. And so we have our intact, and there's no multinational in Nigeria that actually sack any staff. I mean, so we have our personal loans intact. The major area will have been education, schools did not open on time. But again, totality of school and education will low, but now schools will resume last year. We've seen cash coming from kids and school parents are paying school fees. And so we are back to normal, actually. Thank you.
Thanks, Segun. Patrick.
Okay. Thank you. I believe there were about four questions posed. So the first is really around subsidiaries contributing to earnings. The reality is that increasingly the businesses diversified. We spoke earlier on about diversification in rest between interest income and non-interest income. Even within non-interest income, transactional and opportunity, our ability to take advantage of opportunities in the market as well. In terms of the actual business itself, we also see that diversification coming through, and that's where that interesting and attractive contribution from subsidiaries really stems from. The custody business continues to do very well. It's the second largest, second most profitable custody business. The income is repeatedly reliably delivered for the earnings. Our international subsidiaries are also doing great. A lot of the cleanup has happened and they are turning around. And this is performance we're looking at in spite of the COVID operating environment. We got a very exciting franchise in the UK that has delivered very well. Our tier one African countries are also doing really well. So the DRCs, Ghana business doing great. Guinea is also doing quite great. The other businesses are picking momentum. So really the short answer to the question around subsidiary contribution is that the subsidiaries all around are increasing their contribution, are doing better, and that momentum is filtering through the earnings we consolidate ultimately. There was a question around cards revenue, maybe dropping. I think it's really a question around relativity, right? And the reality is that the card business is great, but the other businesses are growing at a faster pace than the card business, which is why it appears as if the card business is not having the momentum of the card business is not where we might want it to be. One thing you would notice looking from 2016, if there's a slide that we shared that takes you from 2016, the split of our electronic banking business all the way to 2021. What you would notice is we've done a fantastic job of constantly introducing new products that take advantage of business opportunities in the market. And those business opportunities tend to be business opportunities of scale and with real earnings accretion. As they contribute to the overall earnings portfolio of our e-business, some of the older, more traditional businesses appear to be reducing in their share. But the reality is overall, the whole pot is growing, but some of these new businesses are growing faster. And indeed, some of the new businesses are achieving scales larger than some of the traditional businesses. So what you really have there is actually fantastic. It shows that the card business is still accreting revs, but it also shows that some of the businesses we've introduced the last couple of years are even growing much better. That is the dynamics you expect to continue to maintain or persist into the next couple of years. There was a question around yields and funding costs. Yes, I think that question came from, and that's correct. And we'd mentioned it before that whenever yields come down, as has occurred the last couple of years, First Bank takes a hit. We tend to do best in high yield and in rising yield environments. Now, once yields begin to pick up, we are one of the we will be one of the best beneficiaries of that operating environment. And so absolutely, if yields begin to pick up, yes, cost of funds might pick up, but we are much more comfortable about our ability to constrain the cost of fund pickup, and then we can optimize our yield environment. If you think back to a couple of years ago, 2016 thereabout, our NIMs were what, about 10%? Today they're about 4.2% thereabout. So just think about it for a moment. Once the yields begin to move up and that the NIMs begin to open up, then that's the net interest income contribution to our financials. And that is easily possible because of our liquidity and position and the fact that our loan to deposit ratio gives us that leeway around the liquidity base to support asset and creation and all and yield enhancing opportunities. There was a question around the update on the Airtel shares. We're still working on that. We have engaged the CBN around the deadline that it had put forward for that disposal. We are confident we will make that happen, just not within the CBN window. Quite frankly, we're excited as well about making that transaction happen because ultimately, once we're able to dispose of that interest, then there are financial benefits that will accrue to us. So all key stakeholders are aligned in terms of disposing of that interest. And we just need to pace it appropriately and strike the balance between quickly disposing of the instruments and optimizing value for shareholders. And like I mentioned earlier, we're engaging the central bank accordingly. And the central bank is in a very good position to objectively assess what it is we're discussing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Tolu, over to you.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Thank you, GMD. We have a question from Toyosi Oni. Toyosi, please go ahead with your question.
Hi, and thank you for another chance to sort of clarify my questions. I don't believe I got answers on a number of questions that I asked. So I guess the first one was how the special bills are classified. How much do you have in these bills? And what is the size of your derivative book? Another question that wasn't really answered was on the total transaction value on agency banking as at half year 2021. And then just to follow up on the explanation that Patrick offered on the fair value gains through profit and loss. Patrick said that a portion of it was FX related. I'm just trying to understand better what's driving this. If you could please offer more color on the nature of these transactions, just to enhance, I guess, my understanding and the understanding of other people on the call as well. I'll stop here and then I'll come back in. Thank you.
Okay, let me apologize to you, Toyosi. We did not take those questions earlier. Apologies, please. We'll treat them right now. And I'm going to ask Ine to speak to the question on special bills and treasury book. And then Patrick will come back to tackle the one on fair value, which you raised or you reminded us we didn't take. Ine, are you available?
Yeah. Thank you for the question. In terms of our special bills, we've got roughly about, as you know, they were issued in lieu of some CRR refunds. So we've got roughly around 700 billion worth of those bills. And as you know, the CBN has been rolling them over as they mature, depending on the tenors that are issued. We do trade those bills from time to time in between the maturity dates, as we do with other securities. So it's nothing unusual there. And the gains or losses as associated with those, when or if they are sold, are recognized accordingly. In terms of derivatives, our derivative book encompasses the typical gamut of derivative products that are readily traded in the Nigerian market. So swaps, forwards, repos, money market as well. In aggregate size, it's in excess of $1 billion, and it's a wide range of counterparts, not just the central bank, if that's your question. I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ine. Just to check, Toyosi, are you happy with that with respect to the Treasury question and special bills? So we can move to the next on fair value you read.
Yes, that's clear.
Okay. Thank you, Tolu. Okay, so Patrick, can you just take the bit that we left out? Yeah.
Okay. So I think she's got two questions. One of them is on the fair value to P&L, and the second is has to do with volumes regarding agent banking. Okay. So in terms of the fair value through P&L, what I had said is it's derivative related and currency derivative related. And that's the nature of that transaction or those transactions that constituted a portion of that. The next bit around agency, you wanted to get a sense of the volume of our transaction count, correct? Half year. Therese, is that correct? If that is the case, that would be about 180 million from a transaction count perspective.
Okay. Thank you very much. I take it that Toyosi is happy with the response. So can we continue with the other participants, please, Tolu?
Yes, we can, sir. And so we have the next question from Muyiwa Oni. Muyiwa, please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Tolu. Good afternoon, gentlemen, and thank you for taking the time. So I have a few questions. First is a follow-up on the agency banking conversation. So just wanted to get a sense of your geographical spread of the agency network and where you expect to see opportunity for stronger growth in that for the network, your medium-term target for your agency network. And also get a sense of the products that seem to be driving transactions in that for your agency network. And then the second question is on NIMS outlook. So how to look at NIMS. So I know you talked about view on asset yield and cost of funds, but I want to know how one should be looking at that going forward, given when I suppose, particularly with the higher rated credit, there seems to be competition around that space, and how quickly are you able to increase rates, lending rates to the top corporates, and how that can improve your NIMs going forward. And then on credit growth, it's been strong, robust. I know you discussed sectors that are driving that, but I also just wanted to get a sense of demand you're seeing, particularly from the higher rated obligors this year relative to last year, just to see a sense of improvement in economic activity. And on capital, so I know you've talked about being happy with your capital levels right now, but if you could share a ratio you're comfortable with from a capital adequacy ratio perspective, that would be helpful. So those are my questions. Thank you.
Okay, so I think we've got five questions here. And again, Patrick and Segun will have to tackle them. Patrick, can I ask that you kick off with the three questions that for you?
Thank you. I think there was a question on agent banking where we're present, where we see opportunities for growth,
What products are driving the transactions through that?
What products we're really pushing through them? I'd answer as best as possible, particularly a bit about the product, because there are certain strategic considerations around those as well. But first of all, in terms of where we are present in 772 of all 774 local government areas in the country. So we have national presence. And that national presence is especially facilitated because of our unmatched branch distribution, because you need a hub to service those locations. But we also know, and in terms of number of agents, we have over 100,000 agents. We see the market, we see the opportunities,
we know that we have not really started scratching that just yet. So if the question is really around growth opportunities for agents, for our agent network, the growth opportunity exists. There are lots of unmet agent growth opportunities out there. We intend to take, to pursue those opportunities over the next couple of years. In terms of the products that are offered, you've got cash in, cash out, bill payments, transfers. Those are some of the very popular products that we push to there. And then cash in, cash out they're all attractive. They're all attractive products. Let's just put it that way. I don't think we necessarily need to begin to speak to the level of attractiveness of each of the products. To the second bit around, I think there was a question around means. And the question was really around how do we look to improve our names, particularly given the competitive landscape, especially with the corporate obligors out there. Well, a few things. I mean, names is really the confluence of cost of funds and yields, right? At the cost of fund end, our goal is really to keep that in check as best as possible. Luckily, because of our distribution advantage, we can afford to be selective in the deposits we take in. And that has occurred for most part of this year when we actually restrained our deposits inflow. We are very mindful about the implications of CRR for excess liquidity. And so we do have a tactical reason to want to modulate our funding carefully. In terms of the asset, there are two big buckets to the asset bit. You've got the treasuries, you've got the loans and advances. A lot of what happens with treasury is really driven by CBN regulation. What happens with loans and advances, a lot more of that is within our control. The market is already responding to the higher yield environment by repricing credits upwards. Given where our credits are right now, vis-a-vis where we know some of our peers are, we clearly see some opportunities to reprice our existing credits upwards. So therein already lies an opportunity for us to improve on our names. We're also very particular about our retail business growth. The retail business has propensity for very high yields. We have the customer base. We've made investments in technology platforms. We want to digitalize a lot of that. And once we begin to push that out, we will be churning retail credits. Retail credits will not aggregate very quickly the way wholesale credits will. But the reality is that the margins we make on those are very exciting. And so that's the bit around NIMS. In terms of CAR, the question I believe was, at what CAR level are we going to be excited around? The truth is we do have flexibility around CAR. As you know, if CAR is too high, then you are capital inefficient. If it's too low as well, then you present the risk of having limited buffer for our risk asset for the risks we are taking as an institution. CAR as a headline does not necessarily speak to the level of risk mitigant in the books. It's a statistics based on the formula that has been presented by the CBN for us to compute. But the reality is anything from 16.5, throw in additional 100 basis point, that range we think is a reasonable place to have an efficient CAR that matches the current risk profile that the bank currently has or accommodates. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, Shegu, I think there's a question on credit growth.
Yes.
Yes,
on credit growth, you are spot on. We actually have high demand from top corporates. Interestingly, they are also expanding their facilities. So you have many of them asking you for tenured loans to allow them expand their factories, bring in more raw materials, And we've seen, and that's, I mean, the regrowth you've seen in my patch came from there, actually. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Tolu?
Thank you very much, Jandy. So we've got one question from Ada Eze Owachukwu. Ada Eze, please go ahead with your question. Hello, Ada, can you hear us?
Hello, can you hear me?
Okay, now we can. Please go ahead with your question.
I have two questions. The first question is on write-backs and recoveries. I want to know if the bank had any recovery and what size it was in half year 2021. And my second question is on forbearance. The forbearance issue with the CBN, where in the financials is it reflected? And how is the bank handling the issue? Thank you.
Okay.
Any other question?
Yes, just on the related question. So we have a question, a similar question to the second question. Hello, Ada, we can hear you.
Hello, Mr. Tolu.
Yes, we can hear you. You had two questions. I thought you read those two questions out.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Ada, we can hear you, but you might need to mute after your second question, you said.
Hello?
Hello, Ada, we can hear
Hello,
you.
Hello, Mr. Tolu.
Hello, Ada, we heard you. So we'll respond to your question just after this.
Hello?
You might need to mute your line. Thank you. Okay, so on the related question to Ada's second question, we have that from Bayo Adekoya, which says that, so to what extent have we complied with the CBN's requirements? And the status of the outstanding Honeywell Flower outstanding loans and the status of the lien on shares. And then also similarly to Mr. Bayo Adekoya also wanted to find out what our 2021 projected performance is. So those are the questions we have right now.
All right, thank you very much, Cholu. I think the way I would like to take these questions from Adaeze and the one you read out, I think from Bayo Adekola, if I'm correct, I would just make a general comment on the CBN forbearance you talked about, and then the projections for 2021. We have not provided guidance on 2021. What we have done has been to give you our direction of travel covering our strategic planning program ending in 2024. And if you look at it, what we have achieved for last year and this year, we believe we're on the right path and we'll be able to deliver the commitments we have made. What is important for us is to see the future. And if you agree, I'm sure you will, that we have delivered on the promises we made, then we look beyond 2021 and say, having achieved the cleanup that we committed, having achieved the growth that we delivered, the next phase of growth will now be, how do we optimize and scale up what we have delivered so far? And so this year has been very tough. I started with that, and we're not able to give you any guidance at this time. Now, with respect to the forbearance, I think we have addressed this question at several fora. Let me be very, very clear on what we said. And in saying that, I will remind us that we operate in a financial services industry. And this industry is highly regulated. There are players, multiple players that look up to the regulator from time to time for one support or the other in the course of conducting their businesses. This is the same from America to Europe to Asia and Africa and indeed Nigeria. And that is because central bank's mandate is very clear, maintains financial system stability. And that requires support to banks, forbearances, if you want to call it that. And so when you hear the word forbearance, it could be technical, it could be commercial, it could be regulatory, and it is standard. The support we get from CBN is not different from the support other players in the market get. And I think the point also has to be made that central bank was very clear that in terms of growth and strategic direction, that they believe that we are delivering value to stakeholders. That is why management was retained. I talked about that. Central bank's point also is that this is a systemically important bank, which provides support to other players in the market. So from the regulator standpoint, this bank and the group is solid. Now, if there are specific questions on clients, I don't think that it would be appropriate for us to discuss specific client questions here for obvious reasons. And I am referring to the question that Mr. Bayo Adekola asked. What is important is that central bank's directives are being complied with, and so far we are happy with the progress we are making on the name that Mr. Bayo Adekola mentioned. But to go into the specifics, I'm afraid we'll not be able to do that. We are working with central bank, and we believe we're on the right path. Central bank made reference to how dominant we are in certain areas of the industry. And I think that is positive for us. And the changes at the board level, which you also referenced, we believe they're positive. There is stability that has been achieved. In the last 3 months, the current board has guided management into delivering numbers that we are proud of. And we think that is the direction that we'll continue to travel on. Collectively, these new directors, you will see about 350 years of experience, and that is strong. And I don't think anybody will question the capacity of the management and the board to deliver the numbers we're committing to you. So please, I just would like for us to not task us so much on discussing client-specific engagements on this call. I think there is a question around write-backs and recoveries from Adaeze, and I would like for Shegu to take that.
Thank you, GMD. The recovery income are always shown in the financials. It can come under solvency income, and it can come under classification under after provision operating profit, depending on where you tend to show it. So you can find it in sundry income, you can find it in profits after, operating profit. You can have it in there. I don't know, maybe on the issues of forbearance, but I will say to you that forbearance can be widely defined or stated, but I will explain to you that there's no forbearance that you see in the reasons of forbearance that you might see. But where when a regulator gives you any concession, it will be defined as forbearance. And I'm sure that virtually all financial institutions will have either one discretion or the other where a regulator will give you concession. And so any concession that they give you on anything is viewed as a forbearance. And so it's usual in the financials to say, I have forbearance, for example, on, the payment of dividend, what proportion should I pay? That will not show in the financials, right? And so those are not issues for discussion or for financial. These financial disclosures are specific, and IFRS is clear on disclosures. On the Honeywell, I'm not sure EGMD addressed this. When the Honeywell issues is a regulatory issue that we are going through it. But let me say to you that under IFRS 9, that Honeywell is not an impaired loan under IFRS 9. But under regulatory issues, yes, regulatory issues are being dealt with. And regulator is dealing with the issue together with First Bank to ensure resolution. Thank you.
Tolu, you are in control, please, Tolu.
All right. At the moment, there are no hands raised. We have a question here from ABU, which says that just a bit of clarity on the loan disbursed under agency banking platform. I read recently in the news that the loans had hit 100 billion. What systems or processes have been put in place to ensure that these loans do not create downside risk to asset quality?
Oh, okay.
The previous question asked by Wale, that's been addressed in the last question that we just had handled. So we'll take the question I just read out from Ebi now. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Ebi. The agency lending is automated. So the 100 billion is aggregate. And we have a good handle on this. Don't forget that we have the agency account with us. And the way we give the loan is something, you either clear it overnight, or if it's over a weekend, a long holiday, you clear it the first working day of the week. So if I, for example, the last Eid holiday, we have Tuesday and Wednesday. So it's likely that the agent might have taken the money on a Monday night to ensure that they're able to settle all their customers throughout the holiday. And so on Thursday, as we're resuming, the cash the agent has collected from the customers that we were unable to lodge in the bank, they will lodge them in on Thursday, and that exposure will clear out. That is exactly what it is. So as today, we don't have any single NPL in respect of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. So finally, as we have a last question from Sojit Sholanke here. Sojit, go ahead with the question, please.
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Hello? Yes, we can hear you, Sojit.
Okay. Yeah, hi, good afternoon. This is Sojit Sholanke from Renaissance Capital. I just have two questions. The first one is, I'm not sure if you mentioned this earlier on, but for your agency banking business, year to date, what's the total processed value, not volume? So total processed value for agency banking, what's that number? My second question is, I would like to get a sense from management. So there's a digital bank in Nigeria called Kuda. You know, today they announced the valuation of $500 million based on their recent raise. Sam, your market cap is probably, I don't know, 600-700 plus or minus. So how are you thinking about this dynamic here, you know, valuation of a big, large legacy listed bank versus valuation of this, you know, newer, more modern digital first fintech companies? You know, how do you think as a bank, you potentially, you know, address, you know, some potential valuation issues for you as a bank? Is this something you think about actively? You know, are there things you're thinking about in terms of trying to fix this valuation dynamics? Any clarity you can give would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think any other question, Tolu?
There are no further questions at this time. We can just take the one from Soja and then we can close it if that's okay.
Okay, can you take the question on the process value for, I mean, that's Patrick, can you take it? I think that was with respect to the agent banking, if I'm not mistaken. Patrick, can you take that?
Okay. Just a second, please. Let me turn on my video. I think the earlier question raised, and I think Soji has clarified, he wants value as opposed to volume. So that's about 4.1 trillion, speaking to value. There was a second question around CUDA. Jemdy, who do you want to take that question?
Please, just continue if you will.
Oh, okay. So I think there are two bits to it. The first is, while still trying to get a good sense of CUDA, there isn't enough visibility into the valuation, what's driving that. What the market has an idea of is the revs, their earnings to date. And as you can imagine, the earnings have absolutely has no relationship with that valuation. So it tells us, for example, there are other things in consideration in setting that valuation. We don't have enough visibility into that. So unfortunately, we cannot comment on that. What we can, however, comment on is on First Bank. We understand why First Bank is not fully priced, and it's not unrelated to a number of the issues we've had to deal with in the last couple of years. And we're working on those, and we're about wrapping up a lot of those issues. What we'd like the market to better appreciate is the First Bank of today, as opposed to the First Bank it knew 2-3 years ago. The great thing is a lot of the things we've discussed the last couple of years are actually coming out to play. The promises we made, we are delivering. And the strategic decisions and discussions we've had, we are actually monetizing. We need to continue to improve monetization just as we completely resolve all the legacy issues. There is still a lot of value in First Bank that the market hasn't fully appreciated. We see it, or we see them. And as we continue with the monetization effort and complete the restructuring effort and continue to engage the investor community, what will be crystal clear is that there's absolutely no relationship between the current market price for First Bank today and the value that that franchise presents into the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Patrick, I think you are spot on. It just underscores the point we have been making over time that the market has not attributed the right valuation to FBNH. And if you just look at the component businesses that were reported today, based on the numbers, based on the scale, based on the size and opportunities that we're optimizing, it just tells you that's a huge undervaluation of the stock. But notwithstanding, I think the scales are beginning to fall off. Market is beginning to see that this management, you know, when we commit, we deliver. And if you look at the performance of the company in the market, we currently are performing the all share index, no question. And we're one of the best performing, if not the best, with respect to the banking index. So we are happy with what we are seeing in terms of our ability to deliver commitments we have made to the market. And as we get closer to the end of the year, I believe you will hear of constantly improving numbers. Hopefully the market will wake up and those perception issues that had held back our valuation will begin to reverse. So we are confident, supremely confident that we're on the right path. And we have seen a couple of modeling, a couple of research papers, a couple of releases and analysts' comments on our stock. We are definitely headed in the right direction. All of the comments that have come so far speak to undervaluation. All of them have reported, have recommended buy. Some have recommended accumulate. So that tells you that the market is seeing what is happening, and we think will be rewarded in the not too distant time. So, Tolu, is there any other thing, or can I sign off at this time? Can we close?
There are no further questions at this time, JMD. So, in the absence of any further questions, if there are any additional closing remarks, we can do that now. Otherwise, we can begin to wrap up.
Okay, thank you very much, Tolu. I think the first thing to do is to thank all the participants, those that have joined on this earnings call. It's always a robust engagement with you all, and we do appreciate your interest, sustained interest in our activities. I would say that despite the headwinds We are cautiously optimistic that this year would obviously be better than 2020. That's what we believe, and we're working towards that. It's not just about hope, it's about strategy and how we're executing that strategy deliberately and intentionally. I think we would be updating you from time to time should there be developments, and certainly we look forward to releasing our 9 months results in the next 2-3 months. And what that will show you is that we certainly are poised to regain our market leadership. And on that note, I would like to thank you and look forward to seeing you again. Thank you very much, and bye-bye.